Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As an initiation ceremony is scheduled for this morning, I thought to speak on some topics regarding Guru Tattva. First, I'll read an anecdote which was sent to me in an email by one of my disciples, Padmanabha Nityananda Prabhu. He lives in London, and he was very much involved in organizing a Shravan Kirtan camp in England just prior to my coming here. So just after the camp, he sent me an email in which he wrote that by coincidence, or rather Krishna's arrangement, I ran into a Ritvik devotee this afternoon. Ritvik devotee, for those who may not know, means someone who imagines that they're directly initiated by Srila Prabhupada, even after Srila Prabhupada left this world. So he ran into, which means it's colloquial or idiomatic English, means he met. Didn't mean he rammed him down with a car. He ran into a Ritvik devotee this afternoon while I was walking, outside walking and chanting japa. This Ritvik was dressed in dhoti and kurta, which is something I don't see every day while walking around Harrow. Harrow is the suburb of London in which he lives. We spoke for about 10 minutes and he mentioned he lives on a street nearby with other devotees and has come over from India to serve on the London Akshay Patra team, which serves prasad into a women's refuge. Akshay Patra, for those of you who don't know, is the name of the container that Draupadi was granted to give any amount of food to her guests, for guests of the Pandavas, which was very convenient when they were traveling in the forest with many rishis. It's been gerrymandered. Don't know what that means. Taken over by the Bangalore Ritvik Temple as the name of their program for feeding what they say is prasadam to, well, it started off with midday meals for school children, and now they're doing it at a women's refuge in London, among other places. This is his full-time job. Apparently, all the Ritvik devotees are paid. He said they prepare the prasadam in Watford, which is a town just outside London, and have gatherings there every week where he gives talks on the Gita. Before he realized he was a Ritvik, I had mentioned to him about your holinesses, namely myself, stay in Harrow last week at my flat, and about the camp. He mentioned he knew your holiness. Yeah, well, if he knows about me from Ritvikvadi sources, it probably isn't very flattering. Later, I asked him who his spiritual master was. So when he replied, Srila Prabhupada, and here he is, a young or youngish man, I understood. I said to him, obviously this is something we won't agree on, and he replied, well, there are lots of other things we have in common, which I replied, yes. Anyway, after some more talking, I told him it was very blissful serving my spiritual master last week, and I feel very lucky to have got the chance to serve my spiritual master and inquire from him and take his guidance. This is why it's important to have a physical spiritual master, because he can guide you, answer questions that you ask him, and you can also personally serve him. He looked a little taken aback, which suggests he'd never even thought about that. But I didn't see any reason why not to tell him this. We spoke some more, and then I said I needed to go. This is a very important point, because very important function in the guru-disciple exchange is inquiring, as we know from Bhagavad Gita, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam tadgya. Jnaninas tattva darshinaha. The word in this well-known verse, which I presume, well, maybe some of you don't know it because some of you are quite new. So, the translation, one should approach a spiritual master for the sake of acquiring knowledge. Specifically, if you see the context, it specifically means for the sake of acquiring knowledge, one should approach humbly by bowing down, and pariprasna means asking all kinds of relevant questions and by offering service, and one should be initiated by those who have one of those who has seen the truth. So acquiring knowledge requires asking questions and being answered by someone capable to answer them, which can't be done in the same way to Srila Prabhupada now as was done previously, but can be done to Srila Prabhupada's representatives. So, and this is a very important point, that those who imagine that they are disciples of Srila Prabhupada in exactly the same way as those who were initiated by him but previous to his disappearance from our mortal vision, they never have the chance to personally serve a spiritual master, interact with him, ask questions from him. It's obvious that devotees feel very happy when their spiritual master comes. But that's not, they don't, the Ritvigvadis don't have that. I mean, when he comes to a place, when I come, you greet me and put flower garlands and all this thing. And devotees are very happy like that. So that's one thing that they're missing. The important process of inquiring and getting answers. I want to discuss that now in some more detail. Discussing, asking questions. We'd like to have the opportunity to have our spiritual master, or to be with him all the time, and then whatever questions we can ask like that, but it's not possible in most cases, because Srila Prabhupada wanted that his disciples initiate each at least 10,000 disciples, and he wanted them to travel and preach according to the first verse of Upadesha Amrita Prithivin Sashishat, which Srila Prabhupada gives the understanding that disciples should be made all over the world. So where's the opportunity to ask? Well, at these Shravan Kirtan camps, there is an opportunity. Although there are so many questions that it's hard to answer them all, or even answer them in detail. I have set up a system by which one can inquire via email. There's bvksangha@pamho.net. Or no, actually it's not pamho.net. Anyway, I'm not exactly sure what the email address is, and questions can be put there, and mostly I don't answer them because I have several disciples who I have overseen personally and who have studied deeply Srila Prabhupada's books and various shastras and traditions, and who are competent to answer various questions. And that's also how Srila Prabhupada, even in his personal presence, was able to minister to so many disciples. He trained and by keeping with him an inner core, and then he of disciples, and then he expected the others to inquire from his senior disciples. And in his early letters from the 1960s, after Srila Prabhupada first started initiating in the West, we'll see that he often gave detailed replies to questions in letters, but after some time, he started writing, "You ask my representative, GBC member, temple president, ask them." And he also emphasized, read the books, because all the answers to your questions are in the books. Of course, that may require some clarification, because one devotee reads, he's a newcomer, and someone else reads who has years of reading and hearing and serving. So the realization of someone who reads the same thing after many years of studying and serving is generally going to be deeper than those who are newcomers. So the more experienced devotees can help to explain that. All the answers are in Srila Prabhupada's books. Doesn't necessarily mean that we understand that what the answers are by reading them. So that's also how so many gurus in the past, not only Srila Prabhupada, of course, have initiated many devotees, many disciples, and been able to give their message to others via their more experienced disciples. They spread their teachings to other disciples. Regarding the topic of inquiry from guru, I'm going to paraphrase an excerpt from a lecture delivered by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, texts 8 to 12, delivered in Mumbai on the 5th of October, 1973. That 13th chapter, texts 8 to 12. Anyone got any idea what those verses are? What it's all about? What's the subject? How to get relief from embodiment. The subject matter is given in the last two lines, etajjnanam. This is knowledge. So these are the components of knowledge, or amanitvam, adhambitvam, and one of them, which means, both of them, amanitvam and adhambitvam, they both mean not being proud, but there are nuances in these terms. Not wanting honor, not being haughty could be the nuances. One of the terms therein that's given that are required for acquiring knowledge is acharyopasanam, worship of the acharya. Srila Prabhupada in this regard stated, we have been discussing for the last few days. Srila Prabhupada often used this phrase, "we have been discussing," to mean that he has been lecturing on. We have been discussing for the last few days about the process of acquiring knowledge. An important thing is acharyopasanam, worshipping the acharya. Now, as we shall see from this discussion, which Srila Prabhupada unfolds, the acharya is not worshipped simply by flowers offering an arati. but he's worshipped by taking knowledge from him, or seeking knowledge from him and acquiring knowledge. If you want to make progress, you have to approach an acharya. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example, relevant example, it makes it very clear. If you want to be educated, you have to go to school. Similarly, if you want to advance in knowledge, you have to approach an acharya. Knowledge in this regard, Srila Prabhupada says, does not mean material knowledge. When Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, etaj jnanam, this is knowledge, he's not referring to knowledge of nuts and bolts, technology, or even within the corpus of Vedic knowledge, there is a huge amount of knowledge about topics that are not directly related to transcendence. There are the Dharma Shastras, which describe how to live in this world, in the Varnashram system, which includes Raja Dharma, the duties of kings, Stri Dharma, the duties of women, Niti Shastra, which is sometimes translated as the science of morality, or politics, could be taken like that. There are the Upavedas, or the secondary parts of the Vedas, which deal with topics such as Ayurveda, medicine, then Dhanurveda, which deals with fighting, the science of warfare, Gandharva Vidya, which deals with music. Then there are the Vedangas, among which there's knowledge of grammar, Sanskrit grammar. There's knowledge of Jyotish, which is often translated as astrology, although it also, as its basis, comprises astronomy. The Vedangas, they are meant for they're meant for understanding Sanskrit, and then you come to the sacrifices. There's the kalpa, how to make sacrificial arenas. Just watch the word, the sacrifice. What do you call that? The yagya. I'm trying to think of an English word. I can't think of it. For making the whatever it is, the sacrificial arena. Yeah, but arena gives an idea of, anyway, whatever it is, you can understand, I hope. So there are many, many topics concerning the material world within the Vedic knowledge. Lord Krishna states, Trividya, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna. He tells Arjuna that there are many topics in the Vedas which are concerned with, they're within the purview of the three modes of material nature, but you should be transcendental to that. So in the Upanishads, which is concerned with jnana, the vast corpus of the Vedic literature is mostly concerned with karma kanda, and then the Upanishads, jnana kanda, in which the topic is Brahma, atato Brahma jignasa. One should inquire about Brahma, the absolute truth. And Gita is also known as Gita Upanishad. So it's concerned with jnana here. Jnana means knowledge of Brahma, knowledge of the transcendence. So to approach an acharya, one should approach an acharya for the sake of acquiring spiritual knowledge. Tad vijnanartham sagurum evabhigachet. The same theme is given in the Mundaka Upanishad and also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that when one has considered the nature of this world and understands that I should not remain within this world, one should seek out that knowledge which takes us beyond this world, and for that purpose one must approach an acharya for that actual knowledge. Srila Prabhupada says here, actual knowledge means to advance in spiritual understanding. Then the next question will obviously be, well, what is that knowledge? And Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that in Bhagavad Gita, the beginning of knowledge is given by Krishna. I am not this body. I am encaged in this body, but I am not this body. Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that, unfortunately, at the present moment, this bodily concept is accepted as knowledge. What do we think of as knowledge? What's the beginning of knowledge for someone who doesn't have a transcendental outlook? Well, the first thing he knows is his body. The first thing we learn in Bhagavad Gita is that I am not the body. And the first thing that someone who doesn't have spiritual knowledge, what he thinks is that I am the body. So when he thinks of knowledge, it begins with, I am Indian. I am American. I am a Brahmana. I am a Kshatriya. But actual knowledge begins when one understands I'm not American. I have an American passport. I may have an American passport, which certifies that I am an American. But real knowledge means to understand I'm not an American, or a Russian, or a man, or a woman, or a university professor, or a homeless person in the street. I'm not any of these things. This is knowledge. It can be accepted as knowledge, but it's relative to my present incarceration in a particular body, in a particular situation. But I am not any of these things. Then, what are we? And then Srila Prabhupada, having in this lecture started with the beginning of knowledge, to know we're not the body, then Srila Prabhupada takes us right up to the highest level of knowledge by quoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gopi bhartuf pada kamalayo dasu dasanudasaha. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the maintainer of the gopis. When one has actually developed knowledge and realization, he can understand, I'm not the body, I'm Brahman. But then one has to see beyond that Paramatma realization, beyond that Bhagavan realization, and within that there are levels, and the very highest level is to understand that, or to be blessed with the opportunity to think of oneself as the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the maintainer of the gopis. God realization is perfect and complete if one is a Vaishnava. But there, if one recognizes Jivesvarup hoy Krishna nitya das, the eternal constitutional position of the jiva is the servant of, as the servant of Krishna. But there are gradations within that. Gopi bhatuhu padakamalaya dasu dasanudasaha. That is our real identification, not this body. Which is why we have to hear. Because it seems axiomatic that I am the body. We have to hear and we have to inquire. How is it I'm not this body? Seems like I'm the body. I feel hungry, I feel tired, I feel happy, I feel sad. It's all connected with the body. But we have to hear and be that to understand that we're not the body and that we are eternal servants of Krishna. We only not only have to hear, but we have to inquire, because we're saying, well, how is that? How do we understand this? How is it? It doesn't seem like that. So inquiry is required to understand this. And then to understand this knowledge, one has to approach an acharya. What is an acharya? Then Srila Prabhupada quotes or paraphrases, Archinoti yashastra tam achare stapiyatyapi swayam acharite yasmad acharyastena kirtitaha. The definition of acharya, according to Shastra, is one who knows not only the Shastra, not just simply that one is learned, but one knows the purpose of Shastra. And he lives according to that purpose, and by his life, the example of his life, and by speaking, he teaches the purpose of Shastra. He exemplifies that, and he makes known within the world what is the purpose of Shastra. So such a person is called an acharya. He teaches this particularly to his disciples. Sometimes it's asked, well, why do we need to have a formal initiation ceremony? Then you're formally accepted as a disciple. You're accepted into the school. Otherwise, you may say, well, I just feel I'm a disciple. But the guru, that doesn't mean the guru accepts you. So the initiation ceremony is formal acceptance into the school of the acharya. Before, Srila Prabhupada says, before one can actually enter into devotional service and engage in devotional service, you have to worship the acharya, acharyopasanam. Because one cannot become a devotee simply by one's personal endeavor. Some rascals, Srila Prabhupada says, say, well, what's the use of accepting a guru? And this Ritvik idea, although they passionately insist that Prabhupada is our guru, but actually they're avoiding to accept a guru who can personally guide them. So practically they're in that situation. Of course, Srila Prabhupada said that those who don't want to accept a guru, they've got a bad experience. So, all right, that's accepted. But as Srila Prabhupada taught many times when he was in the Western world, where there are many bogus personalities coming over from India to the West, teaching all kinds of hodgepodge and setting themselves up as gurus. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, there are so many cheaters, but just because there are so many cheaters doesn't mean that there isn't someone genuine. I was in that situation myself. When I first saw Srila Prabhupada's books, my best friend at school, I must have been about 15 or something, he had purchased some of Srila Prabhupada's books and he was very excited to show them to me. He brought them to school. And I said, I don't want to see this. I know these Indian gurus, they're all cheaters. That was my impression. So most of them are, but that doesn't mean that everyone is a cheater or everyone is incompetent. An acharya is one, very simply to understand, who's received Vedic knowledge through the parampara system. Evam parampara praptam imang rajashayo viduhu. He is an acharya. An acharya cannot be manufactured or self-made. I woke up one morning and I was self-realized. I realized I was God. That happened to someone, I can't remember his name. He was, for years, he was working in the LIC, what's that? Life Insurance Corporation of India. You took it all away from me. And then one, he was about middle age, and one day he woke up and realized that he is Kalki Bhagawan and started promulgating it. And some people believed it. Haven't heard of him for years. He must be a retired Bhagawan. The last thing I heard, the police were hunting him for running away with one of his female disciples and her daughter. I think he was arrested. I don't know what happened after that. Anyway, you know? Oh, he's in jail. He's preaching in the jail. Is it? Yeah, I also go to jail. I've been in jail. I sometimes go to jail. So an acharya cannot be manufactured or self-made. This is a very important point which needs to be hammered home again and again and again, because people taking advantage of the public's ignorance, people stand up and make themselves into gurus, or they proclaim themselves. But a real acharya must come in disciplic succession. One who is under the shelter of an acharya knows things as they are. Acharyavan purusho veda. One who is actually got or is under the shelter of an acharya, he should know things. If you say, I went to Oxford University. Oh, really? Oh, you must be very learned. So, could you tell, and then you ask him, which department were you in? I was in the apartment of atomic physics. So, could you tell me something about this new discoveries of bosons? I said, what, boson? He doesn't know. He should know. He should at least know something. He should be knowledge. He may have been to Oxford University, and daily he goes to the Department of Atomic Physics to sell peanuts outside. So he can say, I went to Oxford University. But he wasn't admitted into the system. He didn't study, he didn't learn. So we have to be careful. The people who call themselves a disciple, we're talking about who is a disciple, he should know things. He should learn. This is the basic meaning of a guru and the basic meaning of a disciple. It's a teacher-to-student relationship. Of course, it's not as we conceive of it nowadays, that you're sent to school and the teacher is a paid person who's paid to teach you, and you leave the school and there's no more relationship with the teacher. And in many cases, the teachers don't care at all. One teacher at school told me, I decided to become a teacher because it's fairly decent pay and it's not very long hours, and you get long holidays. That's why you became a teacher. It's not that, I want to teach the children. He's just thinking of himself. That's all. Of course, not all teachers are like that. But one who is actually a disciple, he should know things as they are. That's why, especially in the beginning, one should be very inquisitive to know and to learn. Not that one stops being inquisitive, because there's no end to learning, but in the beginning one will naturally have many doubts, not necessarily doubts, but he wants to know, he wants to learn, and he should be inquisitive to learn all the basic points. And that's actually what a brahmachari means. A brahmachari traditionally means a student. So the brahmacharis, they should study, and they should be, if the brahmachari means Brahmachari Gurukule Vasan. He lives in the Gurukul. So simply to be unmarried and to live in one's apartment is not a brahmachari. He has to be in the ashram of the guru. And the guru will naturally engage him in service, but the imparting of spiritual knowledge is a major function of brahmachari life. So brahmachari should study, and those who are overseeing them should also be eager to impart knowledge to them. So one who wants to know should go to a guru, and then when he knows to a certain extent, acharyavan purusho veda, when he knows, then it is his duty to teach others, to himself take the role of acharya, and especially this applies when his acharya has passed away from this world. And then one should approach an acharya. If we want to know things as they are, the Vedic system, tad vijnanartham sagurum eva abhigacchet. Not that, I could go to a guru, but I can just sit at home and study books and I'll learn everything myself. It doesn't work like that. The practical system is that you have to be trained. In any higher knowledge or complex knowledge, even materially, you just can't sit at home and study books on engineering or medicine and then say, I'm an engineer. I read all the books. I'm a doctor. I read all the books. I know all the books. But there's practical guidance also. If you start to, you can read the books and then start to practice medicine, but then you'll be called a quack and then you'll be rejected. It's quite common, especially in the West, that people study books on Ayurveda or on astrology and set themselves up as Ayurvedic doctors and astrologers. But the proper system is one should learn by training. Regarding one devotee who set himself up as an astrologer, I heard this years ago, that devotee passed away from the world now. But another devotee told me about that devotee who'd set himself up as an astrologer simply by studying books. So the devotee who told me this said he knew an actual bona fide Vedic astrologer, means he learned in the parampara of astrologers. And the Vedic astrologer said about the self-made devotee astrologer, he knows a lot, he understands a lot about the theory, but because he hasn't been personally and properly trained, he makes some serious mistakes in the application. And it can be very dangerous if you make mistakes in the application. Just like you can have theoretical knowledge of how to do brain surgery, but if you haven't been trained how to do it, and you make a little mistake, then it's going to be a disaster. That's why for medicine, you have to be, in the modern system, you have to go to an accredited college to study. And even after studying, there's a minimum 1 year period of internship in which you are under the guidance of senior doctors. And then you can be allowed to practice. But you won't be considered a senior doctor. You have to be, even after studying and passing the exam, the government will not recognize you as a doctor until you've practiced under senior doctors. Then you can get a license to practice. Otherwise you won't be accredited or accepted as a proper doctor. So similarly, someone may say, well, I've read Bhagavad Gita 100 times. There are so many people in India, there were more a generation ago, who who could quote Bhagavad Gita just like that. Nowadays, it's much more common they can quote cricket scores and batting averages, which is something to do with cricket, you know, some numbers, and I guess it's the average score someone makes. But so many people, they could quote Bhagavad Gita, but then if you ask them who Krishna is, then who is Krishna? They can't say clearly, even though Krishna himself says clearly who he is in Bhagavad Gita, but because they're envious of Krishna, they fall in the category where Krishna says, maya pahrita jnana, asura, asuram bhavam ashrita. They're actually demons, even though they know so much. Nahang prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samanvrita, mudho yang abhijana ti loko mama jamavya. No, that's not there. So, even though they know so much, Krishna's covering of maya doesn't let them see who Krishna is. The whole point of understanding the Vedas is to know Krishna, as is stated very clearly in Bhagavad Gita, Vaidaischa Savaraham Eva Vedyaha. But because they don't approach the proper acharya to understand who Krishna is, then they, even though they know, they may know all the verses of Bhagavad Gita, but they don't understand one single word, because it's all in relation to all the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita centers around the basic fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because they approach the wrong acharya, or someone who is superficially an acharya, who has very good knowledge of Shastra and can even explain it in a seemingly cogent manner, but because they're envious of Krishna, they cannot understand the actual import of the Vedic knowledge. Therefore, tad vijnanartham sagurum eva bigachet, which means you must approach a guru to understand this knowledge. Then one has to understand who actually the guru is. Parallel term, tasmad, parallel statement, tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. Uttamam means the same thing. One should approach, one should surrender to a guru and inquire. Here we're talking about inquiry. Jignyasu means inquiring. One should inquire about one's topmost ultimate benefit. Uttamam. Ut means udgatam, which means going above, transcending. Tamam means this material world. This material world is tama, darkness. So if we are interested in uttamam, the knowledge of the spiritual world which is beyond this material world, then we have to surrender. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta. Prapadyeta means to surrender. One must surrender to a guru. And jignyasu shreya uttamam. One should inquire from the guru about subject matters beyond the matters of this material world. It's not just ordinary inquiries, just like Srila Prabhupada gave an example, just like you go to the market and you ask, well, what is the price of rice? Or you go to the share market, what is the price of this share and this stock? But inquiring from a guru means Brahma Jignasa, inquiring about those topics which are beyond the domain of this material knowledge. Human life is meant for that. Atato Brahma Jignasa. There are so many questions and answers going on in the world, but to actually be a human, one must inquire about those subject matters which cannot be inquired about in other forms of life. Jigyasu shreya uttamam. So this is given in Shastra repeatedly, that one must approach a guru for the sake of inquiring about and understanding the highest knowledge. Just not that I have a guru. It's not just like I'm a disciple of so-and-so. Really? That means you sat in a ceremony. The ceremony is required, but the actual, the crux of initiation is Diksha Kale Bhakta Kore Atma Samarpan. The crux of initiation is to completely surrender oneself. So if one thinks, everyone's getting initiated, I should also get initiated. I'm initiated. Good. Now I'm a senior devotee. At least I'm more senior than the uninitiated. But what have you learned? You can't learn anything if we're not jignyasu, if we're not inquisitive, if we simply approach a guru but we don't know how to inquire, or maybe the guru himself doesn't know how to reply. So either way, unless the guru knows how to reply and unless the disciple knows how to question, it's like the combination of a man and a woman, but one of them is sterile, so you're not going to get children. Both of them have to be potent. The disciple must be serious to understand spiritual subject matter. Real knowledge. Brahma jignasa. He has to inquire about spiritual knowledge, and someone who's inquisitive about that must approach a guru for Brahma gyan, knowledge of the transcendence. Beginning with aham brahmasmi, understanding I am spiritual by nature. I am not the body. I'm not American. I'm not Indian. I'm not Chinese. I'm not this body. Understanding that I am spiritual, this basic point, but not understanding how I am spiritual, what it means to be spiritual, what is my duty in transcendence, means that I am in ignorance. So we should approach, as Sanatana Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ke ami kene amai jare tapatrai. Iha nahi jani kemone hito hoy. Sanatana Goswami, he inquired from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who am I? Who am I? He had his worldly designation prior to this as the most exalted, respectable, and powerful prime minister in the powerful kingdom of Nawab Hussein Shah, based in Gowda in West Bengal. So that was his identity. But now he had left that. Now he was supposed to be a disciple. But the first thing he should know is, who am I? Who will ask such a thing? Someone who realizes that I am suffering in this material world, but I don't like this, and I can intuitively understand I'm not meant for this. I identify myself as black, white, yellow, red, tall, thin, fat, young, old, male, female, American, Chinese, Indian. But I see that all those who identify with the body, they have to suffer via the body and the mind and sufferings imposed upon them by material nature. But this cannot be me, because I want to be happy. So why am I suffering the threefold miseries? This cannot be my actual identity. That I can intuitively understand, but actually I don't really know how to ask. Sanatana Goswami said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I don't really understand what is my actual benefit, so tell me all about it. Please tell me all about it. I am a spiritual being. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described, Jivesurup hoy Krishna Nitya Das. It sounds very simple, but all the understanding of Sambandhagyan, Abhideya, Prayojan, everything is contained within this short aphorism. Krishna Tartashta Shakti Bheda Bhed Prakash. The jiva is spiritual by nature, the eternal servant of Krishna, and is Krishna's marginal potency, manifested as being different from Krishna and simultaneously non-different from Krishna. So this is not very easy to understand. It's all squeezed into aphoristic terms. But there's much to learn. I'm spirit soul. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. That is knowledge. To understand all this, one must approach a guru. And the guru will explain. And maybe explain again and again and again the same things, as we saw Srila Prabhupada explain again and again and again and again the same things. Because repetition is necessary in order to understand. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? The whole topic of the class is on inquiring. Any questions? One question some need to ask is how to stay awake in class, but you can't ask because you're asleep. It might have been very tasty prasad last night, and you ate a lot. Maybe. One good way to stay awake is don't eat at night. You can hear on one of Srila Prabhupada's lectures in 1966. He says, don't eat at night, he says in a strong term. Although sometimes Srila Prabhupada, he enthusiastically endorsed big feasts being served at night. So there you go. You can't always understand the mind of an acharya. Yes, you have a... your question.
Okay, and thank you for your nice lecture.
Who's that, Devarshi?
Devarshi Naradas.
Yeah, okay.
And in the beginning you said about this devotee Ritvik, and what if they say, yes, we are following Acharya, everything in his book, and whatever we need, we ask elder devotees, like, I don't know, in Ritvik organization must be some elder devotees. This is the first
question. We ask the elder devotees. Yeah, but they themselves have... the elder devotees in that system have rebelled against the Guru Parampara system. So if you... it's like they started the Parampara again. In one way they... in one way, they've stopped the parampara, because parampara means one after another. But they say there's no more disciples, there's no more guru-disciple after Prabhupada. And then, or they restarted, and then with there's a break, because Bangalore means Madhu Pandit. He's not initiated by Srila Prabhupada, but he claims to be a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And they all follow him. He's like an acharya for them, because he interprets Srila Prabhupada for them. Every guru has to interpret his guru's teachings for the sake of his disciples, for the sake of that disciple who becomes a guru, just like a child becomes a parent. And what the child learned from the parents, he transmits to his children.
Okay. Thank you. Why was in jail? It was gentle to you?
Why I went to jail? Well, I have been in jail, arrested, actually. You have a criminal as your guru. Well... we were acquitted. Oh, it's a long story. Driving back from North Bengal, which at that time foreigners had to have a permit to go in, and we were late crossing the border with the rest of West Bengal because our vehicle broke down. We went to the crossing point at a few minutes past midnight, and they arrested us. And then we were locked up. And we had to go back several times for the court hearing until our great well-wisher, Mr. Mishra, the lawyer, he shouted at the magistrate in English for our benefit, because they were arguing with each other in Bengali. And he shouted in English, "This is a ridiculous case. You should throw it out immediately." This was, I think, was the third time we went back there. But in the meantime, we were rushing to get back for Govardhan Puja. So we spent Govardhan Puja in a lockup with so many people, and there's no room to sit and nothing to sit on, and rats running around, and come and preach in India. That was 1977. Govardhan Puja. What happened just after Govardhan Puja in 1977? Srila Prabhupada passed away. Yeah. So we were out. We got out. We went back to Mayapur. We were there. We were getting ready to go out again on traveling Sankirtan book distribution. Then after Guru Puja, it must have been November the 15th, because in those days, phones, to phone from Vrindavan to anywhere was difficult. What to speak of another rural place on the other side of India, Mayapur. So the phone message, and then it was announced after Guru Puja on November the 15th. Hare Krishna. Any other question? Yeah, okay. I saw you first. What is envy of Krishna? It's something we don't want to know about. It's something that motivates our whole existence in this material world. It is the sense of independence from Krishna, not accepting that I am an eternal servant of Krishna. We want to act independently from Krishna and imagine ourselves to be the enjoyers of this world independently from Krishna. So that is enviousness of Krishna, denying his superlatively superior position and our position as his servant, and neglecting to serve him. And that manifests in so many ways, including that when we're told about Krishna, those who are grossly envious become more inimical and become angry. Why do I have to serve? Yeah, there was a question at the back there. All right. I won't go on too many. You can actually even keep them for the questions and answers session, right, this afternoon. How about that? Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.